DNA left on a piece of clothing was the crucial evidence that led deputies to an arrest.
A Jacksonville man charged with murdering a Navy recruit 35 years ago is set to face a Seminole County judge this morning.
That genealogy DNA, like the kind used to make family trees on some popular websites, is what linked 59-year-old Thomas Garner to the murder of Navy Airman apprentice Pamela Kahanis in 1984.
A strangulation marks around her neck, physical damage to her face, which suggested a struggle.
Sheriff Lima saying it's not clear why Kahanis was killed, but said genealogy research helped them track down Garner from his DNA.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
I am Lauren.
I am Ken.
And this is Paradise After Dark. Paradise After Dark is a bi-weekly podcast covering true crime,
unsolved mysteries,
missing people,
urban legends, and the dark side of the Sunshine State. But first, if you'd like to support the show, please subscribe to us at patreon.com/paradiseafterdarkpodcast.
On Patreon, you'll have access to weekly bonus episodes, early and ad-free episodes, our monthly spin-off show, Vacation Edition, discounts on our merchandise, and more.
And I think we're going to start doing a few things on that Get Vocal app, correct?
That's right.
That's going to be some Patreon-only stuff, some integrated things.
I was going to get to that, we're starting Get Vocal on Thursday nights, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to be going live on Get Vocal. That's for everyone. But then we're also going to be doing some Patreon-only live shows on Get Vocal. That's GETVOKL.com.
That doesn't spell right.
I know it doesn't spell right, but that's what
spell it again for everybody out there. Cause that, if I say Get Vocal, that's GETVOCAL.
No, yeah. Now you're just going to confuse them. It's GETVOKL.
GETVOKL.
.com. Go on there, create yourself an account, and subscribe to Paradise After Dark Podcast. That way you will get notifications when we go live, and it's going to be a lot of fun, I think.
I think so, too. I think we're going
to
really enjoy it.
Looking forward to interacting with everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got a trial run coming up, so I think when this episode comes out, we're going to be... Actually, they can jump in after next week. Okay, you can also check out our website, paradiseafterdark.com, for our latest episodes, links to our social media, our Etsy store, and a special little donate button if you just want to help out the show one time.
If you have a question, a Florida case suggestion, or you just like to chat, please email us at paradiseafterdarkpodcast@gmail.com.
And speaking of the word Patreon, I think we have some newbies and we got an upgrade.
Yes, we do.
More shout out.
Shelly, thank you so much.
Shelly, woo woo.
Jumping on the crazy train.
Shelly's an OG.
Shelly is an OG.
She'll know.
We had a couple of our patrons up their monthly donation. That was Joshua and Lacey.
Thank you very much.
Thank you guys so much.
Yep, just keep on trucking.
All right.
So, Lauren.
So this week we are discussing the case of Pamela Kahanis.
Is it Kahanis?
It's Kahanis.
Is it Kahanis? Okay.
It's C-A-H-A-N-E-S. I've heard some people pronounce it Kahanis. I feel like Kahanis is, that's just how I would say it.
That's how I was saying it, but I guess it depends on what part of the country you're from.
Yeah, maybe.
So tell us about her.
Pamela Kahanis was 25 years old in 1984 when she decided she needed more out of life. After growing up on a dairy farm in the outskirts of Stillwater, Minnesota, a town of less than 10,000 people, she was the seventh of eight children, six girls and two boys.
Whew, that's a big family. Now, Pamela had already tried moving away to St. Paul, which is a bigger city 20 miles away from her hometown, but apparently this still wasn't enough. Eileen Bergman, Pamela's sister, described her to the Orlando Sentinel as a loving, charming farm girl who wanted to explore the world. So in late May of 1984, Pamela joined the Navy. She said,
"Go Navy."
She said goodbye to her family and flew down to Orlando, Florida, where there once was a naval training camp, which is now called Baldwin Park. Now in boot camp, she was a little bit older than most of the other recruits because most of them were fresh out of high school, which is pretty standard. You graduate high school and then you jump into usually the armed services because the recruiters hit you.
Yeah.
But at this point in her life, she's 25 years old.
Yeah.
Were there any, when you were in the Navy, were there anybody that was 25 years old or older like that in your group?
There was a few, older women, but for the most part, I want to say the majority of them were between like 18 and 20.
Fresh out of high school?
Yeah.
So, well, as Lauren knows, boot camp was rigorous. You got to wake up at 5 a.m. and going all day long. You're doing drills, marching, and learning about Navy history, which that's important.
When she graduated boot camp on August 3rd, 1984, she and her fellow recruits were given liberty. This means that they were allowed to leave the base and go out on the town, but obviously they had a curfew and whatnot. So they had a few days in between when they graduated boot camp and when they were taken off to go to their respected apprentice schools. I didn't have that. I was grad and go. Like literally I graduated boot camp and I got on a plane that same day.
Giving orders and you're gone.
Yeah.
Where'd you go first?
San Antonio.
Okay.
Lackland Air Force Base.
Oof.
So, but she did live in an all-female barracks and wasn't dating anyone at the time. So the first place Pamela went was the Orlando Fashion Square Mall.
Of course.
Of course.
Where else are you going to go?
On August 4th, 1984, somewhere between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m., Pamela was seen shopping at the mall. Somewhere between 6:30 and 7 p.m. that evening, she was seen with an unidentified male at the Navy Training Center, which is the base. The pair was walking on Main Street in front of the base, actually. And later, between 6 and 8 p.m., she and an unidentified male are seen at the Mariners Club, a lounge and bar on the Navy Training Center campus. Around 8 p.m., Pamela is allegedly seen at an ABC liquor store in Sanford, a small town just outside of Orlando. At 1:09 a.m. on August 5th, she bought Chinese food, according to a receipt that was found. Neither the restaurant name nor location is printed on the receipt. And it was just after 7 a.m. on August 5th, 1984, when a passing driver spotted Pamela's body in the overgrown grass in the yard of an abandoned home near Sanford, Florida.
So they've got people that have seen her out at these places. They can prove she was there, but there was no description or no one knew who this guy was at the time?
No.
They don't know if she was with them or just associated friends.
Well, and I think that this is in my notes at some point, but they know that whoever the unidentified male was, he had to be a part of the Navy because she would have had no way really of meeting anyone in that short period of time.
Being in an all-female barracks, if she's with a man, it's not like she's...
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So
well, when they found her body, she is badly beaten and unclothed except for a pair of white underwear. Her white uniform pants lay crumpled inches away from her, and her white belt and black shoes were also there, near the short-sleeved white uniform shirt with her name in block letters. There was about $100 in cash still in her pocket, which this ruled out robbery as a motive for the killing, and the Seminole County Sheriff's Office investigator Robert Janes, who has been on the case since the mid-1990s, told the Orlando Sentinel, although she had been beaten, the cause of death was ruled strangulation.
Near the body was the shopping bags containing purchases from Kmart and the Fashion Square Mall, along with Chinese food containers. Her bra was found a few days later across the street, and according to her autopsy, she had eaten Chinese food not long before her death. And although she was found partially nude, the medical examiner reported that she was not sexually assaulted. Although she was not sexually assaulted, a semen stain was found on her underwear, which matched the DNA profile scrapings found underneath her fingernails.
Now, that's confusing to me that they would find semen, but not...
Well, a lot of people...
I understand there's other ways for that to occur.
Well, either way, they found semen on her underwear. And the DNA from the semen matched scrapings found underneath her fingernails. And I think this is pretty impressive for 1984.
True.
That they collected those samples. I don't know exactly when DNA really came busting on the scene, but I'm pretty sure that in 1984, it had to be a pretty
Well, at that point, what do they call it? Mitochondrial DNA, which is like a close proximity or something. No. I'm not sure how that whole works.
So investigators also found a speck of blue cellophane on her right shoulder and a pubic hair on her left and yellow carpet fibers clinging to the waistband of her pants.
Investigators believe that she was not killed at the location she was found and that she was likely transported there by vehicle. And she had been dead for about 12 hours by the time she was found.
So who would want to kill Pamela and why? I mean, she had just graduated boot camp. While she's in boot camp, I can guarantee you she's not, if she's in an all-female company, she's not like meeting men or anything like that. She had like less than 24 hours to meet this person and obviously piss them off enough to the point where they kill her.
Well, and she wasn't seen with any females, so it's not somebody she knew in the female barracks.
Right. So and well, there was semen found on her too, so we it's male.
Exactly. So, but you know, but had she been seen with another female all night long, then they would probably push the case thinking, well, could have been this woman that she was with. Maybe a female was obsessed with her or something like that. But if she was spotted and seen with a man via witnesses and then semen was found, you pretty much eliminate your pool of suspects to men.
Yeah. Which, well, like I said earlier,
a Navy base, that's a lot of men.
It is. I think the ratio is like about 15 to 1 men to women in the Navy and maybe in the military.
In 1984, though, it might have been more.
Oh, you're probably right.
It might have been more.
So like I mentioned earlier in my notes, authorities immediately believed that the killer had to be someone involved with a naval training facility because Pamela had been there since May and had no way of meeting any outsiders during boot camp. The day before her body was found was the very first day she was off base. So
that's right, because in boot camp, you don't leave.
No, not at all. So this seems to be completely random. It has to be.
Yeah, because she leaves. And it's one of those, if she, what is it? What's boot camp? 11 weeks?
12 weeks.
So you spend all that time with all these females. So the first chance she gets out, I mean, she could have been hanging out with, just to have men conversation. If she's in an all female barracks, she probably maybe wanted to have a little bit of company with men. And so she found a guy and was just chatting, nothing, you know.
Yeah.
So, well, it didn't take long for witnesses to come forward and claim that they had seen Pamela and a man at Kmart the day before her body was found. The witness, who was not identified, said she was with a white man. The pair walked to a vehicle together, got in, and drove away. No one came forward to identify this man that Pamela was with that day, or the man that was seen with her walking in front of the base, or whoever she was with later that night at the Mariners Club. We don't even know if this was the same person that she was with at a different location. So maybe, you know, she met multiple people. She could have met different men as she went along, because I'm sure close to Navy base, when you leave base, it's whatever they are, it's probably full of men. So it didn't take long for the case to go cold fast. And I guess the case stayed cold for a long time.
Yeah, her case was closed, unsolved, but detectives submitted various pieces of evidence for testing. Her case was reopened in 1995 when an analysis determined that the pubic hair found on Pamela's shoulder belonged to a white person and was not hers. But scientific advancements in hair analysis would later undermine that conclusion. In 1996, testing found semen on Pamela's underwear. And by the year 2000, investigators were able to develop a DNA profile that could be cross-checked with the federal database. Testing that year, and again in 2005, found no matches for the DNA.
Well, and just to bring this point up, this, keep in mind that people hear DNA, they're like, oh, case closed. This is 2000, so 2000, 2005.
So at the time, the DNA database available to investigators were limited to samples collected from people who had already been arrested. And I think only those arrested on felony charges.
Yeah, I think then it would have just been felony charges. I think now they do it a little differently, don't they? I mean, it's pretty much.
I think it varies from state to state.
I mean, I have no problem.
I'm not 100% sure.
I have no problem if they log everyone's DNA. I wish they would just like get my DNA and clone me.
I'm pretty sure they have my DNA. being that I was in the military.
I know they have mine because I submitted
it. I probably have like chip implanted in me somewhere that I don't know about.
Maybe that's why you get migraines.
So, as I said, at the time, all they had was this database of convicted criminals. That would later change when millions of people started voluntarily giving their DNA to websites like 23andMe and Ancestry.com.
Just like I said, I submitted mine and I opted in too.
I did. I submitted mine to Ancestry.com and then I submitted it to GEDmatch and I opted in for...
Can I give my little tidbit now? I actually opted in. And when I opted in, that obviously allowed other people to access it. So when you opt in, it's not just authorities. It's the public can access it. And this actually led to finding out that my brother had a daughter.
Yes, you found a niece.
So I have a niece because, well, she contacted me and found me. So
she found you on GEDmatch?
Yeah. Yeah, she was doing.
I thought she found you on Ancestry.
Well, it was Ancestry, but only way she could find me on Ancestry, I guess, is because is that how they do that? The DNA match was close? Or maybe it was Ancestry.
Yeah, because when I log on Ancestry, I can see my first cousin, who I know is my cousin, is my number one person. But then I have like seven or eight people that are my second cousins.
You're right. So it wasn't necessarily GEDmatch and opting in. It was Ancestry. But yeah, she found me and, of course, found out that I have a niece and I have two – what would you call them? Second cousins? Second cousins? No? My brother's – grandchildren, because she's got two kids. So that would be, I don't know what those would be. Nephews.
Great.
Yeah.
They would be your great.
I'm confused.
I don't know either.
Man, and here's the problem with family trees. Sometimes they fork like crazy, and sometimes they don't fork at all. But anyway.
So in 2015, Gal Tizipperman Lotin of the Orlando Sentinel wrote an article about Pamela Kahanis titled Navy Grad's Cold Case Homicide Remains Unsolved 30 Years Later. So here we are, 2015. It's 30 years. Now, for the article, she spoke to Seminole County Sheriff's Office investigator Robert Janes, who stated she could have been killed in the Winter Park or Orlando area or on the Navy base, I don't know, or just transported over there and dumped. What the attraction was, what the connection is, when I find the guy, I'll find out. James and other investigators have assembled a timeline of the day before Pamela was killed using time-stamped receipts found at the crime scene and witness interviews. But one of the case details James continues to investigate is this. Who was the man Kahanis had been seen with the day before she was killed? In a letter she wrote to her mother on August 1st, Kahanis said she liked two men in her brother company, Vasquez Gonzalez and Alan Williams. But neither of these men appear in the Navy records, James told the Orlando Sentinel. So James was running the DNA found on Pamela through every database he could access with no success.
And see, and that's one of the things that we read it and it just, I mean, we discuss it and it happens real fast. But think of the effort that goes into building a timeline because, I mean, you want we're talking down to minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she went here. How long would it take her to get from here to there? So I'm sure that they built basically like we just talked about a family tree, if you will. I got to believe that their timeline was the same exact way. So that's a lot of work that goes into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you put all this effort into it when this happens because you're trying to, you know, you want to solve this case. And, of course, the Seminole County Sheriff's Office and the Naval Criminal Investigation spent over three decades on the case.
Yeah.
That's a lot of time. But over the last 10 years, with the help of NCIS, the U.S. Army Criminal Investigations Command, and later Parabon Nano Labs, CC Moore, which is Genealogy Service, investigators were able to create a family tree. And eventually, in 2019, 34 years after Pamela's murder, they were able to narrow down a suspect. And this is what we like to hear.
So let's talk about familial DNA for just a minute. According to the National Criminal Justice Reference Service, familial DNA searching is a deliberate search of a DNA database using specialized software separate from CODIS to detect and statistically rank a list of potential candidates in the DNA database who may be close biological relatives. example, a parent, child, or sibling, to the unknown individual contributing to the evidence DNA. According to the National District Attorneys Association, familial DNA searching is a technique whereby a crime scene profile is deliberately run through the offender data bank in hopes of getting a list of profiles that are genetically similar to the DNA evidence, and using this information as an investigative lead to interview family members of the near matches. When a search for an exact match to the DNA sample comes up fruitless, a search of familial DNA may bring back a partial match indicating a sibling, child, parent, or other blood relative. In fact, this is how they caught the infamous Golden State Killer in 2018, more than 30 years after his last known crime spree.
Yeah, in 2001, utilizing DNA testing, authorities uncovered that a series of 50 rapes and 13 murders in California beginning in the mid-70s were all committed by the same person. Now, originally they thought it was two separate people, the East Area Rapist and the original Night Stalker. Now, thanks to crime writer Michelle McNamara, we now know him as the Golden State Killer. So in 2018, police create a made-up profile and they upload DNA from one of the crime scenes to GEDmatch. Then they found a mutual descendant of the killer's great-great-great-grandparents. Now, after a few months, the investigators constructed a family tree that we talked about earlier. This leads them to a particular suspect. Now, then they had to determine if their suspect was even in the area of the crimes, where he worked and what he was doing at the time. Now, once they got their suspect, now they have to obtain and match his DNA. So police followed him and just waited for a chance to get a used straw, a cigarette butt, or something. They even had agents posing as servers and busboys and ended up getting his used dishes from a restaurant and matched the DNA to Joseph DeAngelo. So one of the things about the familial DNA, when we were at CrimeCon, we learned a lot about that through CC Moore. And I got to tell you that the way it's done is fascinating versus how it used to be done.
Right.
Because she said it used to take sometimes 11 hours just to even get like remotely close to the same like town or the same state.
Right.
So
it really is fascinating. And that's actually one of the reasons why I wanted to cover this case, because just now, I want to say in the last only maybe 2-3 years, maybe even just 2 years, are cases actually being solved using this method, and it's snowballing.
There's going to be a lot of justice for a lot of people.
Yeah. So if you've committed a murder out there, just wait, because I feel like there's going to be a lot of, in the next several years, there's going to be a lot of crime solved using this technique.
Well, you know, I've talked to people that do the crime, you know, true crime stuff, and they say, well, you know, why did you opt in for GEDmatch? Well, what if your great uncle or what if your brother committed a crime? And I'm like, hey, if he did something wrong and I opt in and they run the DNA through and they catch him, hey, he shouldn't been messing up. By all means, my DNA is there. So if anybody in my family, this is a warning, if you've done something wrong, run and hide now.
Because they will catch you
eventually. They will get you.
Thank you, Kenneth.
No problem. You're welcome. It could be, well, no, I guess it wouldn't be you.
No, we don't share DNA.
Well, I hope not. That'd be kind of weird.
That would be weird. So once a relative match has been made, investigators then just need to build the family tree. And that's where genealogy comes in. It's incredibly easy to build someone's family tree. I built my own family tree dating back to the 1600s. And I also built Ken's family tree with absolutely no input from him.
What?
Literally,
how come I didn't know about this?
You did know about it.
Did I?
Yeah, it was a couple years ago, but I just started building it for you and...
Well, how's that?
I knew your name.
That's it?
I knew your name, and then I knew your parents' names, and then I was able to find your grandparents and your great-grandparents and your great-great-grandparents.
So that's it? So that's it?
Yeah. It's pretty easy to build on Ancestry anyway. It's pretty user-friendly, pretty easy to build a family tree. So once a familial DNA match is made, investigators create the family tree and look for someone who's the right age, lived in the right area, etc.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we talked about a minute ago and doing yeah. the timeline and everything.
Yeah.
So just a few years ago, the Seminole County Sheriff's Office formed a cold case squad. Now, this squad consisted of Jennifer Spears, an investigator with the Seminole County Sheriff's Office, and about 10 retired career detectives, including Robert James, who volunteered his time to pore over 56 county cold cases that dated back to 1968. Now, what they are doing is probably very unique to the country. Jeff Lewis, a retired homicide detective who spent 30 years at the Miami-Dade Police Department, told Orlando Sentinel, "I don't think you're going to find a police department that brings in volunteer cops and sits them down to do this." Which, and I think James is pretty much, he's been on the case since day one.
No, he's actually been on the case since the mid-90s.
Was it? Okay. There was one that, I guess it was him since the mid-90s.
Yeah. I in my research and whatnot, it's hard to, back in the 80s, it's hard to find like newspaper articles and whatnot.
Certain records, yeah.
Yeah.
And whatnot.
So I can't say that I know exactly who the lead detective was at the very beginning. So in this case, a break came in 2015 when Robert Jane submitted the DNA found on Pamela's underwear to a private forensic genealogy service. A forensic genealogist determined the DNA came from somebody with a sub-Saharan African ancestry, authorities said. Testing in 2018 allowed investigators to build a family tree using the DNA found on Pamela, which eventually led them to target Thomas Lewis Garner, a 59-year-old dental hygienist from Jacksonville. Garner had been stationed at the Orlando Training Center at the same time as Pamela. Other than a battery charge while serving in the Navy, Garner had led an unremarkable life since the brutal slaying.
And according to the Orlando Sentinel, for 3 days in early February 2019, Thomas Lewis Garner was being watched at his apartment in Jacksonville. All investigators needed to close the 34-year-old cold case was, of course, a sample of Garner's DNA to compare to evidence found on Pamela's body, which we talked about a minute ago with GSK. Now, their chance came February 8th when he was seen walking out of his apartment and throwing a trash bag in the complex's garbage compactor. Now, Jennifer Spears fished the bag out of the dumpster and found a cotton swab, a cigarette butt, and a piece of dental floss, which is what she wrote into the affidavit. Now, those items were sent to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement laboratory, and they were tested. Authorities said the DNA found in Garner's trash matched the semen found on Pamela's underwear and the skin cells found under her fingernails with 100% confidence, which means you're going down.
You're going down.
You're going down. This is, and here's the part that I like. It's like, it's justice is coming. It's coming for you. You just don't know when. Because we're talking, comes up to like within the last year.
Yeah. Thomas Lewis Garner was arrested on March 13th, 2019. When interviewed by Jennifer Spears and Naval Criminal Investigative Service Special Agent Bill Elfling, he stated that he had no idea how his DNA could have been found on Pamela's body and compared the interview to being in an episode of The Twilight Zone. We have a clip of that interview for you here.
That's pretty upsetting, you know, it's crazy.
I have to think that at some juncture, it has to be a little relieving. Like, is there any, are you feeling any relief?
Relief for what?
Relief that after all this time that we're finally coming to talk to you?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay. So you're familiar with the case we came and talked to you about earlier today?
I'm not familiar with anything you talked to me about today.
All right. Well, we came to talk to you today about the murder of Pamela Kahanis from 1984. She was a recruit on the Navy base. She graduated on a Friday. And on Sunday morning, she was found deceased in Sanford, Florida, dumped in a yard. Okay. So obviously it's been a long 34 and a half years, but the case has been worked consistently since 1984 jointly between Seminole County Sheriff's Office and NCIS. Obviously we have evidence against you, so why we have an arrest warrant for you and why we're here. So we just want to talk to you and see if you still want to maintain that you have nothing to do with this investigation, that you have nothing to do with this homicide.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
That's what basically what I was saying this morning. I have no idea what you're talking about in terms of anything that's happened on that base.
Okay. So if you didn't have sex with our victim, Pamela Cajones, mm-hmm. how did your semen get on her?
My semen?
Yes.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm telling you, when she was found, there was semen on her. Okay, and they've taken that semen, obviously, and done analysis over the years, and it is it has very recently been proven that it is yours. It is your DNA. So how do you explain your semen on her?
I don't know. I don't know how that could be possible. I mean, this is bizarre. This is almost like the Twilight Zone.
I realize it's a wake-up call, but it's going to be proven that it's your DNA and that you were there. This is your opportunity to tell us the circumstances around it. And if anybody else was involved at all, why should you have to take the fall for it 100%? Because that's what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen to you if you don't take this opportunity to
talk
to us.
Well, what I'm going to do is maintain my innocence.
Okay.
And that's the way
it is. How can you do that?
How can I do that? Because I know that I wouldn't do anything that would cause anybody...
No, I'm saying, how can you prove your innocence?
Well, how can you prove that I'm not innocent?
We already have, with DNA in multiple locations on her, and multiple types of DNA. You know, like I said, we got the skin cells, we got the semen as well. So, I mean, you're there. You were there. If it happened, if something happened differently, or you remember being with her and then you left and somebody else was still with her when you left her, tell us that.
I can't remember anything like that happening.
I would think you would remember if you killed somebody.
Yeah, I think you would.
Okay.
Of course you would. You wouldn't be able to, I guess the person with a conscience wouldn't be able to live with that.
Right.
But I would not. To me, I can't see myself being in a scenario like that.
Well, you were in the scenario with her because, again, we have your DNA. So if you're with her and then you left her with somebody else, you need to tell us that. And you need to tell us who that person was.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So Garner was given no bond, and on April 15th, 2019, he was officially indicted by a grand jury for first-degree murder. He is currently incarcerated at the Seminole County Jail awaiting trial.
Well, he's still awaiting trial, so this is something we're going to have to keep an eye on and update at some point.
Right, yep.
And, you know, ironically, Crime Con's in Orlando. He's in Orlando, so with a little luck, maybe when we do our update episode prior to Crime Con, we'll get some more information on this guy.
Maybe we can go visit him in jail.
No, we're not visiting his ass in jail. I have no interest in seeing this guy. I've seen pictures of him. You know what gets me is it's like, they've got you, okay? It's your DNA. Now, I know that there's that little thing that we talked about. I think it was on an off topic where the DNA can be a little different or funny. I forget what they called that.
I can't remember what they called it either.
I'll think of it in a second. Maybe I probably won't think of it. But they got you. I mean, they got you by the balls. They've narrowed it down to you. Not only did they narrow it down to you, they've broken down to your family. So they've got your whole family tree written out.
Right.
They've got a timeline built of where you were, what you were doing. They followed you around. They've got your DNA. It matches everything. Not only the semen, but her fingernails, which usually fingernails, skin cells inside of fingernails is usually
that she was fighting.
A defense. Well, she was in the Navy. Of course she's going to fight. But yeah. This guy, if you look at him, he's a pretty stout guy. I mean, he's a pretty big guy.
Well, we don't know what he looked like 34 years ago. He could have been
probably bigger
or smaller,
more youthful either way. But so, you know, she was fighting. So I would say if you match the semen, that's one thing that could be a boyfriend, but skin cells under the nails of someone who's dead or murdered usually are defensive wounds. So if they match those cells, that's most likely going to be the person that killed her, and they match, you know.
The semen and the cells under the fingernails match each
Exactly.
other.
Exactly. But I'm saying is if it's semen that was found that matched somebody else, that could have been like a boyfriend, a one night stand, but that the cells under the fingernails, man, that's hardcore, nailed it.
Yeah.
To me anyway, at least being sensible about it. So, well, anyway, so I guess that's it for tonight.
Yeah. But we will definitely update.
I think we need to follow this one.
Yeah. Again, if you'd like to support the show, please subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/Paradise After Dark Podcast.
And check out our Etsy store for some awesome Paradise After Dark gear.
Please make sure to follow us on social media at ParadiseDark239 on Twitter and Paradise After Dark Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And you can email us at ParadiseAfterDarkPodcast@gmail.com.
You can also check out our website, ParadiseAfterDark.com, for our latest episodes, links to social media, our Etsy store, and Patreon.
And please make sure to subscribe to the show on whatever platform you're listening on and rate and review. This really helps us branch out to a wider audience. And please make sure to sign up for Get Vocal and subscribe to us there. We're going to be live every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It'd be good time. Good time.
Yeah, not a good time.
Ken's shy about it.
Because I'm
can you guys please come and support him? And just support him and tell him he's awesome.
If no one shows up, then I won't have to do no more of it. So nobody needs to show up.
Stop it now.
I'm kidding. Okay, everyone, that's our show, and thank you for listening.
To Paradise After Dark.
Thank you.